Hi, folks. Time for another check-in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talks. How are you doing, Tacky?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again on this bright and sunny Wednesday.
Gosh, it's just gorgeous. If this weather could just continue right into December, I'd be very happy.
I'd be very happy, too. I finally shook that coat off once the weather started to get a little bit warmer again and the air cleaned up a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. There'll be that the foliage, I think, is going to be a lot later this year. It still looks like summertime around here.
It is, and I shouldn't try to get a walk in today if I can. It seems like this year has been less walking than ever because the legislative cycle was picked up, and I'm in more video meetings than ever. And as a result, I've not been able to enjoy as much outside time as I had last year, even though last year was a lot of work too, but it just wasn't the same sheer amount of video meetings.
Yeah. What's in your committee this week? What's going on?
We're actually having a meeting today with the membership regarding lottery couriers. The story came out a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it actually really made big news in the mainstream papers, but the lottery's cracking down on people who are basically what it sounds like, lottery courier. You pay someone else to get your lottery tickets.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I've heard a couple of stories about repeat offenders, if you will.
Yeah, much like to try to become a delivery service. Unlike alcohol, which actually has a licensing process, there isn't for a lottery. So I thought it'd be a good idea for the members committee to actually look at that issue and talk to the lottery and the treasurer's office about what's going on and ask some questions of what's happening as part of my job. So we're trying to arrange some more info sessions as we can get people scheduled to talk to committee members. We probably have a late file hearing coming up at some point. We're trying to plan an executive session in two or so weeks. We haven't quite exactly pinned down a date yet. I'm having a meeting with the co-chair on Friday to go through the list of what we think is primed to go, as well as looking through the priority list as for the staff to do some more research. And then moving into 2022, as Joint Lieutenant Daly comes in on February 2nd, what materials and committee will take more time for us to do work on and look for an extension order on a small handful of pieces that we believe that can still get done, but we're short on manpower and time to get it done over the Christmas period. So the holiday season is actually somewhat very busy for us on the paperwork end, less on the meeting end, because obviously people go on vacation during the holidays.
Right. And I think more so this year, I think, too, than last year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I do expect a lot of holiday travel, which for me means less meetings. But on the flip side, it gives me more time to actually do paper.
So are these folks that are cashing tickets as a proxy for somebody else to avoid taxes? Is that what you're talking about?
It's a matter of convenience.
Okay.
This is a big part of it. So, you pay someone to get it, pay someone to, deliver and cash, and they get a percentage of the cut.
Gotcha.
They're not the actual one. Now, obviously, if you have over $600, you got to go to a lottery headquarters to do it yourself and sign a legal document. But you don't have to do that for smaller amounts. So, it's really kind of a hustle when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, say you win $500, you pay somebody $50 and you walk away with $450.
Well, exactly. Provided I actually do give you back the full $450. So, this can be a very unscrupulous way of doing business as well. Running numbers essentially in a different way. If those of you old enough to remember what number running is, it's a different way of doing that.
Okay. I was also surprised to learn recently there are marijuana couriers. Surprised me.
Yeah, that's actually legal. It's been on the books since marijuana was legalized, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
But the DPH never implemented any kind of regulations to allow implementation of marijuana, medical marijuana deliveries. There were a lot of not legal deliveries, let's leave it at that. But there was no, even though it was on the books, there was no regulatory process, so it was never quite implemented properly. Under the Cannabis Control Commission, it's a continuation of what was already allowed in American marijuana, but Control Commission took quite a bit of time, actually, to establish regulatory process and licensing for the industry to do home deliveries. COVID, again, seemed to have expedited a lot of things that were, quite frankly, stuck in the bureaucratic quagmire.
Yeah, it's everything took a higher precedence for sure when that hit. Folks wanted to figure out how to get what they wanted without getting sick.
Exactly it. And, you know, I understand medical marijuana much better in many ways. I had friends who have died from cancer where medical marijuana was a very important end of life option, as opposed to using morphine or other type of painkillers. They didn't suffer a large mental deficiencies and was much more comfortable towards the end. They didn't smoke it. They didn't eat it. I mean, it was done in droplets. Mm-hmm. I'm not clear in the long run whether or not medical marijuana supplements or treatments that did not involve smoke or edibles, more of droplets or pills for just the TCH, whatever it's called,
THC, I think, yeah.
Just the non-hallucinogenic components, yeah. but the nervous system assistance components, I'll just oversimplify this again, to help address, nausea, hunger issues, and most importantly, pain management.
Right, yeah. So what do you think, Zaki, about the governor calling out the National Guard again, this time for COVID testing and maybe corrections department help?
No, it continues to reflect the fact that we're not out of this pandemic. Mm. And the National Guard, I thank them very much for, quite frankly, yeoman's work over the course of the past now, almost 2 years, I mean, year and a half plus, on stepping up to, quite frankly, dangerous situations to try to do the best minimal training to get the job done. We got them to drive school buses and now additional testing in schools because there's just insufficient manpower to do so. People, I don't think fully appreciate, exactly how much more work COVID creates with the existing staffing and now staffing shortages. People are taking retirement.
Yes.
Past few years, and people have also changed professions. We talked this multiple times before that people just decided that this is it, or this is a time to change. And as a result, the governor has to take steps to try to keep this COVID testing and moving along. I mean, the children rate among testing positive has skyrocketed in the United States, over the past 3 months, especially after school reopened. I mean, massive jumps. And the death rate among children obviously corresponds with the infection rate. When there's a high infection rate, sadly, the odds improve. You're going to have a higher death rate. Massachusetts is trending that direction, but it's not like an unvaccinated or low vaccination area, especially down in the deep south where the vaccination rate is still very slowly climbing, but too slow. The goal here is that, having enough adults, teens that are vaccinated keeps the virus more isolated away from smaller children, but obviously there's no way to guarantee that, especially with interstate travel.
Right, which is going to increase starting next month, as I understand, with very little restriction between Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, the Biden administration still has to put in an exact plan. I don't claim to know the details of any of this, but yeah, our two biggest trading partners are Canada and Mexico. Obviously, China's is a major trading partner as well. But I mean, our border countries is enormously important to our economy. Put aside our arguments of immigration, which by the way, Canada does have immigration problems in the US, which people don't want to talk about. But I mean, put aside those issues, the ability for people to travel back and forth for work, as well as recreation is essential for both economies. Massachusetts's number one tourist origin is Canada.
Hmm. Makes sense. It's close. It's drivable.
Exactly. And they come here to enjoy, Boston, and conversely, people from here go up to Toronto and Montreal. So, it's, we've not had that type of trade with us. I mean, the other two major countries of tourism is China and England. And we all know how that's going. So we don't really discuss that. But opening up Canada and border will be enormous benefit to Massachusetts, even if it's, heightened scrutiny going through regarding COVID. I mean, along traffic and semi move consistently, it'd be great for us.
Seeing we're on the topic of pandemic, I always like to ask what's happening with the federal relief money at the State House.
Oh, we had a caucus discussed it today, and there's an objective to try to get some kind of plan together before we close our session in mid-November, to at least spend a portion of this money and leave the remaining in escrow. We have 4 to 6 years to spend this money, and there must be a spending plan. It isn't like, hey, let's just grab $50 and move on. I mean, it's not a cookie jar situation. So, you know, we hope to have some kind of plan in place before we close session for the winter recess. Although technically speaking, we're under emergency rules, so Speaker could just keep us here to Christmas. I mean, there's technically no reason under the rules he couldn't do that. But I think I'm not speaking for the Speaker, but I would suspect the Speaker's trying to hold us to the traditional schedule as much as possible pending emergency. So, you know, hopefully by end of month, we'll have some greater clarity of what portion of the $5 billion we're going to have a plan for. But it is clear from Ways and Means today that we are not spending it all at once, but we're going to take a portion of the plan. We actually have a $1.4 billion and change surplus from FY21. This was largely unexpected, a lot of unexpected in good ways. So we're actually moving a supplemental budget today, about $300 million of that, to officially close the books on FY21 as a final number from the comptroller. The comptroller will give us the final count on revenue received, and then we'll escrow the majority of the $1.4 billion into a separate account, again, like we did the Fed Minute Trust, for us to try to figure out how we're going to manage that. We are very conscientious of the fact that this is all one-time money. So people sitting around thinking, oh, we can do X, Y, Z, you know, there's no guarantee there's going to be this tomorrow. So especially the Fed money, more than anything else, it's not designed for long-term programs. Right. So I mean, we're doing some supplemental because of COVID pandemic impact. Capital projects, obviously one-time costs. But I mean, it's really designed to mitigate COVID impact. And hopefully, you know, in the 4-6 year period, you know, we either be learning how to live and manage this, or hopefully it may be over. I have no idea.
Right.
I have no idea. So, you know, that's kind of the direction we're heading. We're getting our suggestions into Speaker's office in Ways and Means, but you know, we're still quite a few weeks away of figuring out how we're going to manage this. And again, the feds have that $3.5 trillion spending piece on our capital, which we're trying to figure out what's going to happen, as well as there a big spending plan down there as well, and how much that is going to impact us in terms of money coming to Massachusetts. It's going to be in the billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The question is what it's going to be for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does the administration have control over any exclusively, or is it all up to the legislature, Turkey?
Right now, since we snagged the money for the ARPA money, for lack of a better term, and stuck it into a trust fund, it's under the legislature's control of expenditures.
Okay.
The federal infrastructure money and the federal general program money depends, right? I mean, if it's an existing program, you're basically doing a supplement. So from our standpoint, it's like 100% pass through. So if it's like, you know, we want to supplement the food stamp program, the SNAP program, the feds decide they're going to supplement it with like COVID relief, temporary measure to fill some gaps. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we get the money, we just kind of pass it straight through, right? It's non-discretionary.
Yeah.
You know, it's capital money maybe as well, but until we get details from the feds, we don't know which is going to need us to actually treat it as a legislative approval for priorities, or does it supplement an existing program because of COVID impact, and then we just pass it through.
Okay, because I mean, for instance, here in Quincy, $46.3 million, I think, was promised to the city. Is that not a guarantee now?
Oh, no, that's already spent money.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, they gave that out in July. I think it's like statewide $3.2 billion to city counties. So, I mean, as much as, municipal government is all like, you know, we want more, they got more.
Okay.
The city budget's about $330-ish million, right? So $46 million against $330 million budget—that's a lot of money.
It is, absolutely, yeah.
You know, Boston has about a $3 billion plus budget. I think they got almost $700 million.
Okay, that's incredible. So, I
mean, yeah. This ain't chump change by any imagination when you compare to the size or ratio of budget. And we're not the only one. If you look at even wealthier communities with smaller budgets, I mean, they're getting relatively equal ratio sizes.
Hmm. Okay. Stay tuned for that. Will there be public hearings for that, do you know, or how will that work?
Well, the mayor has, put out a solicitation for folks to provide impact regarding how to see that money spent.
Yeah.
Other communities are following a similar process now to get public input. The mayor appears to have complete control of the money. at this point, unless the council wants to try to pass ordinances to do something about that. But again, that's for your question to the council about whether they desire to try to.
Of course, ordinances have to be signed by the mayor, so.
Got to get their override number, right?
Right.
And, but that's up to them to say how they want to manage that, because at some point there'll be supplemental budgets from the city, just like we got supplemental budgets. And if there's Fed money sitting there, well, do they need to pass supplemental budgets? I don't know. I mean, again, that's a city question, not a question for me. But and I do understand the legislature can't appropriate, the council can't not appropriate, only the mayor can't appropriate. I do understand.
Right. Yep.
It's really about, you know, what kind of scrutiny they want to do at this level, the same way we're putting enormous scrutiny against the governor.
Okay. We will wait and see then. Stay tuned for that. I think, like you said, this doesn't have to all be spent at once. It's up to 3 years, I think, for that allocation.
Yeah. Well, states between 4 and 6, depending on where.
Okay. Here in Quincy, as you're well aware, the new voting wards and precincts map has been determined and approved actually by the Secretary of State. What's going on with the legislative districts?
Well, we announced legislative districts yesterday for communities that have precinct maps and approved by the Secretary of State. You know, that's the lines they use. Thankfully, the council was able to get this done timely, and they used the precinct maps that you see online to create our districts. You know, the priority has been for our district committee to create more minority-majority districts. I believe it's out 33 this time. Statewide, if you're a seat that the incumbent is leaving, what normally happens is that district gets sliced and diced a little bit to try to meet the objectives of a minority-majority district, or becomes much more easy to use because you don't have to worry about an incumbent's place of residence. We obviously do not want to try to create a situation where you are no longer living in your district, because that means you move out of your district by November 8th to find a new place to live, you know, in like a few weeks.
Yeah, not a great time either to start shuffling real estate around.
No, I mean, you know, I actually did have that. My friend Paul Mark, was elected me, had already planned to move his home, which actually made it somewhat easier in 2011 and 12 for him to be redistricted, because he already had planned to move his primary residence. But given the nature of how this is set up, we need to get this to governor's desk by the beginning of November or sooner. In case there's an override or amendment issue, we can amend an override before November 8th. And obviously, like, you know, it's, let's be honest, ain't realistic to move people out of their homes in their district. So yes, keeping people in their district, in their residency, was important.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, especially if they, you know, children in public schools or what have you. Yeah, it gets to be messy.
Yeah, you got like 2 weeks to find a new place to live now. Y'all can imagine how this is problematic. And of course, voter registration is actually very important as part of moving, and that becomes a disaster zone. So, you know, we do have some more majority districts on the South Shore. You know, Bruce Ayers and Bill Driscoll in Milton do now have minority districts. You know, they created one in Brockton. Mm-hmm. They started consolidating some people back into big cities. So Dan Hunt, for example, has moved back into Boston. He will not be part of the Quincy delegation next cycle. Quincy folks, reps have consolidated more into the city of Quincy, because Quincy's grown from 92,000 to 101,000. In my situation, I am picking up one more precinct. So I'm going from 13 precincts to 14 precincts.
Oh.
So my population is now 45,000 plus-ish.
Oh, okay. Where's your new precinct?
My new precinct I'm picking up is 4-5 precinct 2. If you look in the map, that's basically starts at Carew Street. It's down by St. Anne's Road, right? Okay. Down there. Stretches all the way up to Haywood Street.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Which is the Wheelhouse Diner.
Yep, gotcha.
Basically, just past the garage on the MBTA garage on Hancock Street, on the train track side, stretching all the way down to Haywood Street, down both sides, past all the funeral homes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Think about it. There's a lot in Hancock Street, you know, past the Fry Mobile.
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah, past the Fry Mobile all the way to the Wheelhouse Diner.
Okay. Whose district was that?
That was Bruce's.
Oh, okay.
So now I have all of Ward 5, all of Ward 1, Ward 3 Precinct 2, Ward 3 Precinct 1, so that's Hospital Hill and one side of Walson Hill going southbound. And then I keep Brewer's Corner. Well, 404 is not really Brewer's Corner anymore. It's a little, it shrank it geographically. And then 402, which really hasn't changed that much overall. That's down by De Montilio's.
Yep.
And it's good freeze, that area.
Wow, that's a big portion of the city. Wow.
Yeah, I always said I would represent closer to 40% of the population. Now I'm closer to 45% of the population. And geographically, it's, if you look at the map, it's close to half the city geographically, maybe even more than half the city. I mean, I know Bruce has a very large district, but it's a chunk of it's the Blue Hills.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yes, which is nice, but not a lot of people live there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, geographically, yeah. I mean, you know, there's the, you know, obviously I have all the beaches and the, you know, my Black Street Estuary, which is why I live in front of, you know, and Marymount Park and Pageant Field and all that. But yeah, there's the Blue Hills.
Yeah. So, well, okay, very good. So essentially you don't have the peninsulas, you don't have the Point area, but you have some of downtown too.
Yeah, I mean, downtown. Actually, I go deep into the Point. I'm down to River Street.
Oh,
yeah, so I mean, those who know, you know, your geography, I mean, go down River Street and actually creep down Washington Street just a little bit more as well. That would be the east side, I think is the way to put it. River Street, Edison Park.
Okay, gotcha.
South Cove Manor, I'm on that side of the street. So I actually have creeped into Quincy Point. That's actually part of Ward 1, Precinct 1 now. So
yeah,
it's everything on the south side of C Street, where Central Middle, Broad Meadows is, and then you just kind of creep down Southern Artery. And, you know, got the Washington Street plus everything on Southern Artery moving southbound. So, yeah, I'm actually all over the place. So, you know, obviously I have all of Ward 1, but, you know, I go past the Clam Box, you know, up to the Wheelhouse Diner. I mean, I slip through a Wallison Hill heading for Montilio's. Mm-hmm. You know, I got parts of Phillips Street, School Street's back in district now. So I go down to one side of Phillips Street to Water Street. There's a lot of little craggy points. By the way, guys, I didn't do this to myself. The city drew this map. So I'm just living with it.
Right.
So I got like, and then obviously Quincy Center shrank because of higher density.
Yep.
So Ward 5 Precinct 1 is really just really tiny now, geographically speaking. Yeah. But I'm, it's you know, closer to the firehouse now.
So you'll be reaching out to your new constituents, or, you know, how does the notification process work, or is it up to people to find out on their own?
Yeah, I need to figure that out. I mean, last time I lost Ward 3 Precinct 5, which was Montclair, those little very straight streets on the other side of the Stop and Shop in North Quincy.
Yeah.
I got Ward 5 Precinct 5. And frankly, there was no major geographic changes. I mean, they were all relatively intact in terms of lines. So it was easy to do a straight up mailing to Ward 5 Precinct 5 saying hello. But Ward 5 Precinct 2 actually grew. I mean, it's in North Quincy now. It's on the edge of Norfolk. It actually is Norfolk Downs, right? Right on the edge of Norfolk Downs. So yeah, I'm not quite sure how to do this just yet. Yeah. And then I got lines going to River Street, and you know, it is like all these really craggly curb cuts now. I need to think about how I'm going to do this next year on communication. Maybe just a straight up glossy mailer from me, rather than a formal letter. I don't know. I don't know, because it's like, you know, it's like World War Precinct 1. Yeah, it's pretty much all the same, except it picks up, you know, a dozen or so streets at the very edge of the Point.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, you have some time to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. Like I said, last time Ward 5 Precinct 5 was pretty much always been the same. And it was easy just to like, I'm just going to mail this precinct. This time it's, you know, big stretch of 5-2 is now stretched out deep. And I got all the stuff on the edges that the city has, you know, moved things around on.
All right, stay tuned for that. State House reopening?
Nope. I got nothing. You know, we've not heard from the opening committee, honestly. 2 weeks ago, we had another COVID positive case inside the State House. So contact tracing was initiated. I was not there. Actually, I was in the building because I had some work to get done, collect some more paperwork or drop off paperwork because I'm tired of storing paperwork in my dining room. And stuff really belongs in the office. And we're just kind of still kind of like working it out right now. So trying to figure out, you know, how it's going to play out. So, you know, you're going to see me in two dimensions for a while longer.
Okay. I think that's places like Amazon just announced today that they're allowing their workers to stay remote indefinitely. So it's
high tech companies, and Twitter already announced, you know, during pandemic, they everyone's working remotely pretty much almost forever, it looks like. Again, this is going to have a huge impact on real estate property, commercial real estate property in Boston and Cambridge and other places that are very dependent on tech industry or financial services, a business that doesn't have to be there 5 days a week, whether it be a hybrid, partial shift in Boston and partly at home or all at home, or only have to come in when necessary. You know, well, yeah, we'll see how that plays out over time. I think this will have an enormous impact on our economy in the commercial real estate market.
Oh, I think you're right. And, you know, companies, especially for-profit companies, are realizing, hey, we can save a boatload of money if we don't have to keep these big office buildings and pay people to come in every day and maintain them and clean them and supply them.
Yeah, and again, I don't know what government's role is in all this, because these cost savings is the expense of your personal usage. So your electricity and water in particular is going up in price, but you're not getting compensated by your employer for it.
Right.
So I don't know if there's any kind of government role. I mean, obviously, I have a bill out there to allow people to take business deductions, even though the W-2 employees, the Trump administration, and the Republican Congress took away that ability for W-2 employees to take business deductions. So thank you very much, guys in DC, for doing that to us. But you know, I have filed a bill to basically allow us to do that and follow the timeline of sunset. So I believe it was like 2024, 25 when that sunset will end on the prohibiting W-2 employees from taking business expense. And, you know, we'll try to bring that back to at least on the state level.
And it's not only businesses, even some state agencies are finding, you know, they can save money if some of their employees don't come in.
Agreed. I mean, the cost savings, of course, in our world is a little bit different because it goes into the budget. But again, it'll be an interesting question for the administration. Again, this is actually out of my control. But if you're collectively bargained union member, the question is, do they try to put more stipends in to, again, reflect the fact that, you know, you're using your resources for your job at home, or they, you know, they come up with their own system independently if you're not a union contracted employee.
Yeah. More questions than answers right now for all this stuff, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is very uncharted territory at this volume of this type of changing work environment. I know people that work at home. You all know people that work at home, whether it be W-2 or independent contractors. But you know, generally, people can address those on an individual basis. Now this has become, you know, a major size of our workforce.
Mm. Curious, Techie, your take on the... And it's been going on for a long time, is the consolidation of big banks, especially, and, you know, whether or not the state has any role to play in that.
Oh, I know a lot of random stuff, right? So one of the interesting things about Massachusetts is that we actually have deposit size limits.
Yes.
A bank can have more than X number of deposits that's adjusted annually. That's why you see a big bank merger in Massachusetts. They have to sell off a lot of branches to smaller banks as part of that merger. So it's actually very difficult for a big bank to do a super consolidation in the state unless the legislature changes the deposit limits allowed. And it's not a small number of deposits, folks. I mean, we're talking a lot of money. So it's not like, you know, they're hurting in any way.
Right.
It ensures diversification of our banking industry. And of course, now credit unions have become much more, not just limited membership. Credit unions, Under state law, has the ability to move into other counties to provide those services and provide some competitive, basically loans and interest rates, although interest rates aren't really going anywhere, you know, provide some services that big banks may not provide. And, you may want to be a more home small bank if you're not traveling the country. You know, people use Bank of America, obviously, if you're traveling a lot. You can find a Bank of America, Citibank, a Chase, you can find ATM machines and, you know, banks all over the place. But if you're more local like me, who doesn't travel the country needing to find an ATM, you know, Colonial Federal Savings Bank is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, so everybody needs their different tastes. But I mean, the different banks and diversity of banks creates competition, particularly when you need loans. And, you know, maybe the Fed's raised the interest rates a bit, and maybe we have more competitive CD and saving prices, but we shall see. So, I mean, if you're unhappy with your big bank, you know, obviously explore a credit union or another small bank. But if you're unhappy with a big bank, but, you know, you travel a lot and need to be near a Bank of America, and you don't want to eat more fees for ATM transactions, I mean, you know, there's try to figure it out. And you got places like Discover Card, for example, has gotten to checking industry. Saving industry and loan industry as well as a bank slash credit card slash transaction company. Mm-hmm. You know, online banking is a thing. And I personally have not taken advantage of it, but I know some friends that have and gotten some better interest rates on it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and there are multiple just apps now that people do all their banking through without any kind of brick and mortar facility behind it.
Well, one of the things that have occurred, and I really need to do this myself, is to migrate onto all electronic bill pay. I mean, I do it for some, but I really need to explore doing more of that, which is bad for the post office, obviously. The post office depended on stamp sales and to use the postal service. But COVID, again, has changed how people shop and financial transactions because, you know, remember early in COVID, it said you could get the disease via paper. So people like all freaked out about mail and transmitting paper. And now it's a very low probability of getting COVID by paper.
Right. Yeah, we've learned a lot since those early days, for sure.
So, I mean, obviously, I don't want to hurt the postal industry. You know, it's a very important service to all of us. And you guys all saw they slowed down the deliveries because they're trying to save money using ground transportation versus air transportation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sent a letter on Tuesday, a ride in Weymouth on Friday.
you could probably walk it there quicker.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, it's hard for them. It's an essential service that we can't get rid of, honestly. But at the same time, though, I mean, we have so many alternative methods of communication. I won't say the mail is not antiquated. I will say it's subject to modern technology challenges that they really have no control over, nor do they have the ability to compete it. They cannot compete against email. They cannot compete against you paying your bills electronically. There's nothing to do about it.
That's right. Yeah, they have to, you know, shift with the times for sure. Any update on the unemployment situation, Tacky?
It's still pretty steady. I mean, you know, we're still doing well as a state. I mean, it's reflected in our tax revenue. I'm trying to remember what was in caucus today, because now you're making me think on the fly after, like, my short-term memory works poorly compared to my long-term memory these days. But I believe we're about $500 million ahead of FY22 projections. Now, it doesn't guarantee we're going to have a surplus, but it makes us more comfortable with moving to the winter months if there's another drop. At least we know we had some growth getting into a potential drop in the winter, because we still don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, revenues have been good, well ahead of projections so far, no guarantee they're going to continue, you know, is a sign that, you know, unemployment rate is in decline and that people are working again. But the low wage jobs continue to be very challenging to find people to work. As you saw, a lot of companies have now increased their minimum wage.
Yes. On your own. Yep. Yeah, the market's forcing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I we talked about this before, but again, you know, unemployment benefits extension has ended. People have reevaluated whether they want to work in the jobs they were working before that was very much front facing. People are reevaluating whether they're going to continue working at all,
mm-hmm.
you know, retirement. And, you know, I hate to be morbid because, well, I'm morbid a lot, it seems, in these podcasts, but I mean, some people died. And they were working these fund-facing jobs with high exposure.
Right.
It's surprising they were making minimum wage.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You know.
I think there's going to be pressure, too, with the cost of living increasing quickly now. That may have an impact on revenues. We'll have to see.
Yeah, inflation is here. It's, again, inflation in this country is a little different from inflation in other places. Most people think inflation of, you know, when your money goes from $1 to $10,000 to buy a piece of bread because you just pump too much money in the system by just printing money. Here is a supply chain problem. Money. People have more money. They can, you know, we want to encourage some degree of spending because we're a commercial-based economy. We're not a manufacturing economy. Money doesn't move. Nobody makes money. But I mean, we have a shortage all over the place. The Suez Canal backup continues to be felt today. Insufficient shoremen and truck drivers to deal, not just because of a shortage of workers, but also because of the increased demand. Mm-hmm. Combination of really two problems that are just not good. Not enough workers and too much supply coming in than normal because not just on COVID medical equipment, but other aspects of economy has restarted. And manufacturing and the supply chain can't keep up. And of course, if COVID hits another country, we get materials from, even if it's just one part that needs to be assembled to the rest of a part of the United States, you know, supply chain gets slowed down. And I don't have to talk about microchips. Everybody talks about microchips.
Right.
That's our problem. So, you know, what we're facing is we're facing an inflationary issue on supply chain, and we all have a bit of more money. But again, you know, people are varying workers. People want to get, you know, they're trying to entice them by getting paid more. And then we still have an infrastructure bill coming down from the feds that, again, will pump money into infrastructure, which you need, which, again, puts money in people's hands, which puts, you know, more money into the system, which can cause more costs to go up. And, of course, the massive house sales help and don't help, right? Now there's a supply problem. There's not enough homes for people to buy. But, you know, it's causing house prices to go up, which, again, drives up cost of living for all of mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you want to get a job as a truck driver, longshoreman, merchant marine, you probably could right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you definitely can. You know, it's not just here. I mean, all of Europe is having the same problem. The British, you know, here's a fun one from Brexit. My Brexit story of the year.
Okay.
The British under Brexit no longer have reciprocal licensing of the EU. So they can't get truck drivers from Europe to come over to England to work because you can't drive into the EU. Yeah. And the candidate consequences of ending free trade agreements, everybody. This is things you got to think about before you start screwing around free trade agreements. And one of them in their case is basically moving goods and services, not having proper license, not even have reciprocal licensing with a place you need to go.
Wow.
It's like not being able to use a Massachusetts driver's license to drive in Canada or Mexico.
Right.
You know, and same thing. I mean, people hate things like NAFTA, but if you got to get a different driver's license to drive into a U.S. from Mexico in a truck or vice versa, yeah, your goods are not moving that fast.
Right. You're not going to do it. Yeah, exactly. Wow. They cut off their own supply chain.
Yeah, it's not the sole reason, but yeah, this is a major factor over there in the British right now.
Interesting. Have not heard that. Very good. Let's talk about, let's leave on a positive note, Jackie. How about that?
No, we can try.
Well, there's some fun stuff happening in Quincy. There's the new historical museum at Old City Hall, and the Quincy Art Association has a brand new gallery, never before in their 42-year history. So that's pretty neat, too.
Yeah, and again, bringing more culture to our city. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, people should definitely partake of visiting Old City Hall. If you're not visiting Old City Hall, you definitely should not just visit the Adams Green. I mean, the green is beautiful, but
yeah.
Interior of the Old City Hall is gorgeous, and they do have that wonderful display space in the bottom floor.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it's being utilized now to pay tribute to military veterans, particularly the generals at the new Generals Bridge and Park. So, great place to learn more about them.
Yeah, and I've been there a couple of times. I mean, it's actually very well done and very impressively done. So, you know, as the downtown kind of shapes up, it's not entirely clear where everything's going because the city still has to approve a whole lot of zoning issues. So don't ask me. The city's in the process of approving all those permits and zoning. But I mean, yeah, it's clear that the city has done a great job on bringing back our history, bringing back our cultures, as well as making it public for everyone to see.
Are you involved at all in the redevelopment of the Quincy Center T station?
Nope.
Okay.
In district, but no one wants to talk to me about it.
Then we won't even go there.
Folks, if you heard nothing else from me, it's pretty much yep, nope, yep, nope. I mean, I don't have time to dance around some of these things.
So, well, yeah. I mean, the MBTA is its own authority, as you know. So it's got carte blanche.
It is challenged. I mean, they've had way too many accidents or driver error in some and one fatality in the JFK station regarding not properly marked off area on a staircase is a reflection of, again, and it's a management issue. I know people love to blame workers, but I mean, the inconsistent management over the course of its lifetime, unable to keep a general manager, you know, more than 5 years at a time, you know, creates that lack of a management team that has a provision and a plan for more than 1 year on a system that's the second oldest on the planet, you know, well into a century plus. I think it's over 110 now years old, using equipment and rails that are old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, our rail system hasn't changed in width. It isn't a reflective modern rail anywhere in the world. I mean, the Green Line rail, for example, has been there essentially like ever, and doesn't reflect other rail systems on the planet.
Right.
At all.
Some people call it quaint. You can just call it old.
it's yeah, exactly it. So, I mean, you know, modern rail doesn't look like what we have. And it means that we're going to have to rip up everything and inconvenience people more by not having trains, as we felt in Walsall Station construction, you know, impacted people. We have a beautiful station that's ADA compliant. But, I mean, imagine trying to do a whole lot of ripping up all the rail.
Right. Yeah. It's a major, major disruption for sure. So we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, the T is a challenged agency. I'm not going to lie about that. And, you know, I put it squarely in the fact that we have inconsistent management for so long to actually have a vision, agree or disagree, at least have kind of long-term vision. I give General Manager Pollack a lot of credit on trying to manage a lot of past problems and, current future issues they try to do simultaneously on a plan out. And yes, it's going to make people unhappy. I'm not going to lie about that. Right. But, you know, we need some leadership there that actually is going to try to make forward progress. And I do believe he is. I mean, remember the last general manager didn't make it through a full year.
No, I forget her name, but yeah, it was, I think, 9 months or so when she was out. Yeah.
Yeah. And before that, didn't make it past for a full year either.
Right.
So, you know, General Manager Pollack has lasted a good amount of time, and you know, he does have a vision. Like I said, we can discuss, agree or disagree about it, but I mean, he is moving forward, and he has to deal with all that bumps from before, but at the same time try to, you know, modernize the T and move it forward and save for all of us while dealing with a lot of budget constraints.
Okay, well, so much for leaving on a positive note.
Ain't an easy job, the T, trust me. You know, but I mean, it has reformed its board of directors. I mean, essentially, you know, the control board's ending. And, you know, I called it more like a receivership in some ways because it, you know, didn't have a full independence. But, the governor appointed a board of directors, which was prior to the control board. So yes, it's starting to receive some normality, even though there's still such a structural deficit in the budget. I mean, clearly it's moving towards greater stability.
Yeah. So actually, which the Quincy mayor serves on. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure he'll be an advocate for Quincy as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Reach out to you, Techie.
No, again, 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014. Smash a button, get a staff or leave a message. We're still working remote. Tacky.chan, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I am drowning in testimonial emails. I will find your email somewhere. If you got a constituent concern, particularly in need of help, I will find it. One of my staffers will get back to you as timely as we can get around to it. Obviously, you guys don't know my Facebook. You know, it's State Representative Tacky Chan. You can watch past public hearings. I've tried to put information up, as well as my Twitter account. I do have a Twitter, but I don't use it too much at Tacky Chan. I said, well, they get my own name on Twitter. And obviously we have tackychan.org, which is the website we just use for information referral that people need to find a phone number, you know, that helps you out there, as well as links to websites for service agencies. So, I mean, plenty of ways to find information. Obviously, if you try to get in touch with me, we'll do our best to get back to you, you know, as best we can.
All right. Appreciate it. Always great to get an update, Tacky. Appreciate it.
You know, you're welcome. And I'll see you in a week.
Sounds good. All right. Take care.